In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome into a brand new episode of Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com. Go rate, subscribe the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@tobaccoroadsportsradio, where you can catch this every Friday, as well as the Keep Pounding Podcast Network, Pro Wrestling Talk, NASCAR, you name it, ACC Big Four action. We've got you covered here in the heart of North Carolina. Desmond Johnson, that's me. I'm your host here for Friday, January the 26th. I'm already in February already. Loaded show today. Sam Dracula from All Hornets Sports Illustrated stops by to talk. What are the Hornets doing? Are they blowing this thing up? What can they do going forward? Who would you keep? So he'll be here for that. David Glenn will be here from the North Carolina Sports Network as well. His bi-weekly jaunt through franchise players in the sports buffet. We'll talk NFC, AFC championship matchups, ACC, who can beat Carolina right now, and much, much more. So loaded show, but coming in first, he is a contributor to Cat Crave blog and a host of the Kitty Lit podcast. Ricky Rains joining us here on Franchise Players. What's going on, bro?
Hey, man. How are you, Des?
I'm good. I'm better, especially after I slept. I put it on Twitter, I think yesterday, that the Panthers fan base, bless their heart, I love them. I'm part of them. We're the most emotionally knee-jerk charged like fan base in existence. Like,
yeah,
we just can't be pleased.
Some of it has to stem from like trauma, right? Like, this can't be like our natural disposition. This has to just be a cumulative of the last 3 to 7 years.
You keep hitting a dog over and over again, like, you know, the dog is gonna respond a certain way, and that's kind of how I feel like the fan base is reacting. True. Not indifference, just like skepticism, I guess, is the best word to use here. Let's just start at the beginning of the week.
Yeah.
Dan Morgan promoted from within assistant general manager up to the general manager role. Give me your thoughts on Dan Morgan becoming the new general manager of the Carolina Panthers.
It's a difficult thing to separate Dan Morgan from his player years here in Carolina to Dan Morgan, the executive and the scouting personnel guy in Buffalo and Seattle, and then his tenure here in Carolina, right? Because he was here for one of the worst stretches, if not the worst stretch, of the entire franchise, going 14-37 over these past three seasons. He was a late addition in the May of 2021, so he wasn't really involved in the pre-draft process and the draft process and all of those decisions made in that 21 season. But the records still fall on his lap as an assistant GM. It's a high position, right? I was an advocate for a clean reset. I thought that it was a really good opportunity to do that right now with the firing of Frank Reich, with the abysmal performance this season when we were kind of like sold on this idea of an all-star cast and a roster that was ready to win in a down year for the NFC South. I don't hate Dan Morgan for what he brings to the table, especially in a new capacity of president of football operations and personnel department. I have a lot of doubts about his role in the previous regime and how much we are supposed to just give him the benefit of the doubt without having earned it. I don't know any other situation where an internal candidate was promoted from a 2-15 season.
It's crazy too, because I was like that in the beginning. And then I kind of had to remind myself, well, I wanted Dan Morgan when they hired Scott Fitter. Like, I wanted Morgan to be the GM just from following him from where he's been. Spent 7 years in Seattle. I love the fact that he's really more on the talent, like scout side, yeah, not the analytic money side. And they're going to hire somebody to come in and replace Samir Suleiman, who is no longer with the franchise, they announced this week, to handle that part of it. But I love the fact that, and looking for where he was at the periods of where he was. So when he was in Seattle, that's when they built the Legion of Boom. And he was part of that process of picking those players. And those players weren't all first round picks. Like, they were all deep in the draft. So they really had to do due diligence to find them. And he was a part of that brain trust. So I like that. When he left there, finally went to Buffalo and went underneath Brandon Bean, who was an assistant GM here under Dave Gettleman and probably shouldn't be the GM here, but we let him, you know, walk out the door. He was there during the previous time when they drafted Josh Allen and that whole process. And people forget Josh Allen wasn't a can't miss prospect. He was kind of a diamond in the rough that they had to kind of they bet a lot on to bring him in. And of course, that's brought a lot of success. And he was also part of the trust that got in players like Stephon Diggs, and they drafted Gabe Davis, and you know, players that are over there right now. So he was a part of that. So when he got here in 2021 with Scott Fitter, and I mentioned it earlier this week, I'm starting to feel like the front office and the coaching staff for the Panthers last year, the way it was set up, it was almost done intentionally with fail safes, like all over the place. Like if something happened here, then we've got this guy already in the building that was either a hot commodity or being interviewed for head coaching jobs or general manager or whatever. He's already here. So we already have an internal candidate that's just as good as anybody else that we would have outside. And you see it with Ejiro Evero, with Thomas Brown still getting interviews. It felt like the younger guys they brought in are here for that, because they're all in their 40s. Dan Morgan's 42 or 43 or something like that. Evero's 43. So I think that was kind of the plan. If it is, it's genius, because I've never seen anybody do it that way before. But if they just stumbled into it, that's fine too. But you know, like, but I think that's what's happening with Dan. Give me your thoughts on Dave Canales, the new head coach, former offensive coordinator from Tampa, who spent 7 years with Dan out in Seattle.
I think that Dave has earned the opportunity, right? I mean, he 14 years under Pete Carroll. I believe it was 9 years as a wide receiver coach. And then he kind of elevated into that pass game coordinator, quarterback coach. Finally got his shot as offensive coordinator here in Tampa this year. Another reclamation project at quarterback with Baker Mayfield, right? Baker was kind of a forgotten thought as the number one overall pick at one point. I mean, he's a polarizing character, but from an on-field performance standard, you kind of just kind of pass by him after what he did with Carolina, after going to Los Angeles for a small portion of the year. It just seemed like he was kind of on the way out, and what Canales was able to get him to do in Tampa was a really admirable coaching job, in my opinion. It does come with the caveat of the talent around him. There were some very significant players. Mike Evans is a Hall of Famer. Chris Godwin, great ball player. They've got some talent on that offensive line, but he still had to come in and get the most out of them. And that's what a coach's overall job is, right? Is to elevate their players, get them into a position of success. And I think that he did that for the most part with them. Perhaps we're a year early on Canales. I don't think that that's the worst thing to be. If you're going to bank on one of these younger coaches, you don't want to be competing in their prime candidacy year, right? So if you go in there and you could jump a little bit before, I don't have a problem with that. What I think where my skepticism lies with Canales and Morgan is just the process of the hirings and the timings of it. I would have liked to see, you talk about how Morgan was involved in the personnel and the evaluation aspect more so than the cap and the finance. I was curious why we didn't have other candidates with that specific background come in. We brought a lot of candidates that have that cap background and that finance background and analytics. But Dan was kind of like a shoe-in, it almost felt like.
Yep.
And then the timing of the Canales hiring, we could have waited. There was no other interviews, right, for Dave in this cycling period. So it didn't seem like he was in high demand, at least from our outside perception. Who knows what was actually happening behind the scenes.
True, yeah.
But if you could have made one last push, right, for the Ben Johnsons, the Mike McDonalds, or any of the highly coveted guys that are still in these conference championship games, and it is entirely possible, man, that they said thank you, but no thank you to us. I wouldn't doubt that for one bit. But if you make that one last swing, I think you still have Canales sitting there next week that you can make that hire. So from an optic standpoint, it kind of comes across like maybe they were a little bit early on that, a little bit preemptive in the hiring, and they didn't go through the entire due diligence period. But again, that's from an outside perspective. You know what I mean? There's, I'm sure, inner workings that could clarify some of those details for us. But Canales, from a coaching standpoint, man, I think that he's got the goods.
See, I come from it like, I know a lot of people have David Tepper kind of framed in a certain villain type heel role right now at the moment, and justifiably so. He's done a lot of different things that have justified him earning that. But I've always looked at it like, he's not a bad person. He just wants to win, and he doesn't know how. He's never done it before in the NFL, and we're watching it in real time. Like, we're watching him experiment with how to build a team in front office right in front of us, and it bothers us because it's our team. So it's it's taken forever for you to do this, and we haven't been in the playoffs in 7 years, and now we're having to reset again. It's the third time we've had to reset since you bought the team. when there was nothing to reset when you got it. Like, like literally, like we're good to go. As a matter of fact, I almost wish in an alternate universe that he had just kept Ron Rivera, kept Marty Herney, and let them rebuild the team. Like, he never even gave him a chance to rebuild the team after Cam got hurt. It was like once Cam got hurt and Ron went through that, was it 2019? That 2019 where he was playing like Heinicke and he went through like four quarterbacks towards the end of it. And we kind of knew, and he got let go before the season was over. And then they had that weird thing where the Panthers kind of let Rivera have a goodbye press conference, which never happens in the middle of the season. But in the end, it kind of helped Rivera out because it helped him be on the market early and he got the Commander's job. It did, and you know, now he's out there floating around again. So it's just, I don't know. I think the fan base is just, this is the most apathetic I've seen the fan base in a long time. And I've been a Panther fan since day one. Maybe 2010 is close, but we all knew that, well, we're still just, that was a Jimmy Clausen, Matthew St. Pierre, like just a bad year. Like, we needed a quarterback. Like, we knew we needed a quarterback, but we had pieces. Like, that was an injury year, pretty much. Everybody was hurt. 2001 was just,
down bad.
We just weren't good. we just weren't good. It was the end of the George Seifert era, and even that year though, it didn't feel like this year, where it felt like we were in a fight every week and we're just helpless, like to fight back. Like, if they scored over 17 points, it was a wrap. It didn't matter what part of the game it was.
it felt like we, our roster was better than our team was, right? And that doesn't like make sense when you think about that from like a sensical standpoint.
Yeah,
but our roster was not built to be 2-15. We put pieces in place with an idea and intent. That idea just failed. And that's why you put that responsibility on the head coach and the general manager and Scott Fitterer. You got to hope that the alignment of Canales and Dan Morgan is really going to help with a clear vision. I think that that's a really important piece of that puzzle. The only thing that I'll say about Tepper too, because I agree with what you're saying, I don't think that he's as much of this villain character as he's made out to be. My last article for Cat Crave actually talked about it. Are they a draw or a deterrent, Bryce Young and David Tepper, right? Because they're the two polarizing objects on this team. And I don't think it is. I think he wants to win so badly, but it's like you said, he doesn't know how. But there is a part of that that needs to be understood from Tepper, is that if you don't know how, you have to remove yourself. Jed York is a really good example of that. They also hired Sportsology Group to come in and overhaul their structure and organization and help with the hiring process that ended up with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. Jed York was very vocal about the fact that he had been too involved with that Jim Harbaugh era, and that he was going to take a step back and not be so hands-on, not have to be involved in every decision, not have to have these meetings. And so yesterday, one of the things that I think caught me off guard with the Canales thing, and this, like you're talking about with the knee-jerk reaction, I knee-jerk reacted to it. There was inside the announcement talking about, you know, and Dave Canales will report directly to David Tepper.
Right, yeah.
It's not an uncommon practice. I understand that. We are not a common situation right now either. We are coming off of tumultuous times where our owner was accused and known to be meddling and overreaching where you should be. Walking into a weekly meeting with your head coach, who's a former NFL quarterback, and telling him that the current quarterback needs to fix his footwork is a very strange way to go about things if you're a hedge fund manager.
Although he was right. He was right
about it. Because it didn't come from him, though, right?
Exactly.
It came from Scott Fitterer and from other coaches. But Tepper wants to get his voice heard, right? And he wants to get his credit for being a football guy because he loves football.
That's what
I don't have a problem with him loving football. But if you're going to hire football guys and say that you're going to allow them to do their job and you create a new position for Dan Morgan as the president of football operations, that should be the guy who deals with the head coach. And that should be the guy that deals with the football operations. It's the point of the title. So I hope that that's just a misstep to have that included in that announcement. I know that other teams had it included, and there are other teams that did not. The Chargers didn't. The Titans didn't. So it's one of those things you could have omitted and avoided a backlash. Maybe they were trying to get ahead of it. I'm going to go into this with an open mind. Canales did some really good things with that offense, though, and his work with quarterbacks has to be comforting for Panthers fans that have doubts about Bryce Young or are worried about his development.
That was, and when because I think I kind of knew a day beforehand that it was going to be Canales. It was kind of pointing that direction when they hired Dan Morgan. And what you were saying with Morgan, it kind of felt like Morgan was the front runner from the jump. And then you come to find out that while they're interviewing these coaches in these Zoom meetings, Dan Morgan's in there. And it's like, oh, that's weird.
He was playing in the gym.
He's still in there. Right. So I was like, okay, that makes it feel like that. So again, it makes me kind of think while they did hire the agency, I don't think it's a case of Tepper saying, nah, I want to do it this way anyway.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like that type. It feels like the agency was like, look, this is what you already have. And this is what we did to the 49ers. And this is how we structured it. Dan Morgan is your John Lynch. And this guy that you're looking at in Tampa, he's going to be the next Sean McVay or the next Mike McDonald or whoever the next hotshot guy is calling plays, the young 40-something guy. Go get him now. Because if you really think about it, nobody was talking about Sean McVay or any of these young head coach, offensive-minded head coaches until they became the head coach and had success. Like,
we talked about
crapshoot, really.
Yeah, we talked about Canales only getting the one interview with us, right? Mm-hmm. Mike McDaniels only got the one interview with the Dolphins. We saw how that panned out. It worked out pretty good, right? All you got to have is one person to fall in love and believe in you, and it can work. The thing with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan is that they didn't have a relationship before either. And I think that that's a little bit worth noting. Mm. Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch was actually in a booth broadcasting one of the games for a Kyle Shanahan game down in Atlanta in 2016. And he actually was just speaking glowingly about him. And Kyle reached out and thanked him for talking about him in that way. And then John eventually reached out again and said, hey, look, would you consider me as your GM? Go approach Jed York about it, you know? So it's interesting that that relationship is wildly different than the buddy system of Dave Canales and Dan Morgan. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's necessarily a negative thing either for there to be familiarity and being aligned and on the same page with a similar vision.
It's going to be interesting. I will say I do feel a little bit better with them knowing each other and kind of having an eye. They worked together for 7 years. So, like, clearly this was a Dan Morgan pick at coach to me. This was not a Dave Tepper pick. I think Tepper wanted Ben Johnson, but this one feels like, and they were ahead last year on Ben Johnson, it felt like. Like, Ben Johnson is that guy now that you were talking about that's in his prime. Everyone's kind of wanting him. They wanted him last year, and he decided to go back to Detroit. And
our situation was so unappealing that we missed out on him in his prime years, right? And we tried last year.
We tried to get him.
And had other plans. But so this year,
been that next year.
Man, he just wished that we could have built on something positive this year, right?
Well, we'll go out there and try it again. That's right. And they got some work to do. Definitely to bring you back because we're going to have we're going to try to figure out what we're going to do in the draft. And I don't know how aggressive Dan's going to be or how much he can be in the draft, but this roster's got some holes, but they've got some money too. They can spend and they've got some decisions to make. Brian Burns, Frankie Louvu, you can go down the list of things they need to decide what they're going to do, but appreciate you coming on. And you can follow you guys work on Twitter at Cat Crave, if I'm not mistaken, is the handle for
Cat Crave. Right? Crave blog is Cat Crave blog. And then my handle is at Ricky Bowbody.
Up there, right there above them. So definitely follow them. Excellent work. And go check out the Kitty Lit podcast. Excellent stuff. I love bringing on Panther content creators because the ones that are in the papers and everything else are kind of disappearing. Like, we're the ones that are kind of carrying the news and stuff right now for the Panthers. So,
isn't that right, man?
Yeah.
Wild times out here right now.
Right. It's crazy right now. Crazy times. Appreciate you coming through, man.
Thanks for having me, Desmond.
Coming up, David Glenn stops by from the North Carolina Sports Network in his bi-weekly sports buffet. You're watching Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com.
Franchise players are often referred to as the face of the franchise.
Welcome back into Franchise Players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com. Rate and subscribe over at the Tobacco Road Sports Radio YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TobaccoRoadSportsRadio. The drive for five, trying to get the 5,000 subscriptions. Definitely go over there, rate, subscribe. Hear everything from Hornets news, Panther news, NASCAR, pro wrestling. There's all kinds of stuff over there, and a lot of it North Carolina-centric sports talk. So definitely go check us out. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson, here with you every Friday afternoon, giving you the latest and the greatest in the world of sports in North Carolina. Joining me, he is a contributor for All Hornets Sports Illustrated, Sam Dracula in the house. What's going on, Sam?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
My Carolina Tar Heels are keeping me sane. They're the only team that I root for that are actually surpassing expectations. Everybody else this year, Panthers and Emma Hornets are just – is this rock bottom? Is this rock bottom for the Hornets? The Hornets just lost to the Pistons the other night. The Pistons are the worst team
again
in existence, like right now. I think they've won five games, and two of those are against us.
Yeah.
So, what's the Is this rock bottom for the Hornets?
Oh, no, because they're going to trade some more guys. It's going to get worse.
Oh, boy. Well, that was actually going to be my question. What are key names you think might be traded before the trade deadline now that Terry Rozier got traded earlier this week, which wasn't really a surprise to Hornets fans. We've kind of known since they drafted Brandon Miller that Terry Rozier's days were pretty much numbered in Charlotte. It's just a matter of when they pulled the trigger. I don't know if people thought they were going to do it when they did, but who's most likely on this roster to be traded, do you think?
I think PJ Washington. Mm. A couple things. I think Gordon Hayward. So the candidates would be Gordon Hayward. You're talking Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
PJ, you're talking Miles Bridges. Maybe Cody Martin, maybe Nick Richards. I think that's pretty much the list.
That's the team, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty much.
Those guys hurt. You know what I mean? That would make it more complicated to trade him. Like with Hayward, for instance, he's a good player, but he can't stay healthy. And at $30 million, I think he'll be a buyout, right? I think Kyle Lowry will probably end up being a buyout too. But look at PJ, who like Miles Bridges, for instance, has a no-trade clause. And I don't know how many teams would want to do business with him, right? So I don't look at him as a guy who could be traded before PJ. PJ's primed to be the best candidate because he's a versatile big who has a declining contract, a de-escalating contract, right? He gets cheaper over time, 16 this year, 15 next year, and 14 the year after. So I look at PJ as the best possible guy, especially because he's not in the starting rotation. Why pay a guy that much if he's going to be your seventh man? Or a sixth man, you know? So I look at PJ as the best possible trade piece at the moment.
And it's crazy, too, because we just went through all this in the offseason to bring PJ back. You know, it's kind of wild that he might be one of the first ones to go back out the door. But it feels like this time, like it just feels like we're in the same, like Groundhog's Day. Like it feels like every season it's the same thing where the team just gets decimated with injury. So you never really see completely what they can do. I guess really last time we saw it was 2 years ago when they made the play-in, and that was that whole they were playing the Hawks and something happened to their transportation or something. They had to walk to the arena. Remember, like it took them like 45 minutes to get there, and then they just got blitzed when they arrived, like 40. It's like, why'd y'all walk to the arena? What's going on? That's the last time they were in the playoffs, and that was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So much has happened to the franchise since then. Out of the roster, out of the names you did not name that could be tradable, Give me four guys that you want to build around that are currently on this roster going forward.
I'll pick four.
I had to get it to number one. It wasn't easy.
I'll pick four. No, I'm kidding. I'm mostly kidding. I kid because it's easier to laugh than cry, right?
Yeah, right.
So, obviously, for me, the number one guy is Brandon Miller. He's, for me, because he hasn't been paid yet, that's the only difference in LaMelo's injury issues. But number one on the list is Brandon Miller, then LaMelo, then Mark Williams, more injury issues. I'm worried the big fella with the bad back. That's usually a bad sign. Yeah. And then behind those three, I'm going Nick Smith Jr. I like that kid a lot. He could be the one of the big winners post Rozier trade, increased play time. Because before Rozier got traded, Nick was up to like 20 minutes a game. And I hope that just continues to build. And you know that this draft class, this 2023 draft class that we just saw, is looking pretty good. Especially considering how bad, like it's so good, it's made me forget about the 21 draft class completely. Like Miller and Smith, forget about Kai Jones and James Bouknight. Those are the guys. So Miller, LaMelo, Williams, and Nick Smith Jr. Those are my guys.
What about, what do you do with Miles Bridges at this point? Because he's playing okay. He's been available, he's been out there. But with everything that's happened with him the past year or so, it's not, I don't feel the same vibes that it's so much of a guarantee that the team's going to actively continue to try to keep him on board. I would think he's a trade piece at this point. What are your thoughts on Miles and where would he be best suited to go? Because I'm thinking someplace out west, like the Lakers or someplace where he can fit into a rotation and be a utility piece.
Yeah, he's a clutch guy. So, you know, him playing with LeBron makes a lot of sense. My favorite Miles Bridges fake trade is him for Jonathan Kuminga at Golden State. Hmm. You know, him being Bridges and Draymond Green are close, right? I don't know if you want Green mentoring anybody right now, but he is a real veteran, a future Hall of Famer. So, you know, there is chemistry there. With the Warriors need help, right? And he can help that team out right away. And Kuminga, who's like 21, 22 years old, still has some upside on him. He's kind of was beefing with Steve Kerr, so he may be primed to be moved himself. And he also kind of extends the timeline because Kuminga hasn't been paid yet. He hasn't had that rookie extension yet. So it allows the Hornets some more wiggle room as they try to figure out what they want to do with the roster. You know, but with Bridges, one of the things with getting off the Rozier commitment next year, like that salary cap commitment is now freed up if they wanted to pay Bridges in the summer. So that's just nothing to keep in mind of. But if I'm the Hornets, I'm looking to move Bridges. There's no point of having him on the team anymore. Yeah. Like, similar with Rozier. Like it should not bottom out, but shouldn't be committed to guys when you're not a good team. Like the Hornets are capped. They were a capped team. No cap space, and they had at the time they had 8 wins. That's a bad mix. No cap space. No,
that's not
single digit wins. It's a bad mix when you're in January, right?
That math is not mathing up. So
they gotta add some flexibility until they figure out who they want to build around and who they don't.
Follow him on Twitter at Sam Dracula, all Hornets contributor. Sam Dracula in the house talking a little Hornets hoops. We didn't forget about the Hornets. It's just they've just gone through it. They're just really going through it. And I feel bad, too, because like going into the season, I'm like, yeah, OK, they got some stuff they can deal with. We kind of thought that maybe Rozier, Gordon Hayward, because of his contract, might get moved somewhere along the way. But we also had hopes that this team can at least compete top 10 in the East, at least the play-in tournament, that they've got enough young talent and some vets to get there. They just can't stay on the court. I mean, LaMelo's missed multiple games with the ankle stuff. And then, like you said, Mark Williams with the back. Gordon Hayward's continuing injury issues. Everyone's missed some time, pretty much, it feels like. And it's always 2 or 3 of them, like every single time. I don't know, last time we had all 5 starters, like who were supposed to be starters, after the same time. So it's really hard. I say all that because Mitch Kupchak and Steve Clifford, the general manager and head coach, who are basically being left behind by the previous ownership, are their days numbered too? Because if that's the case, how much control will Kupchak have over the roster to trade things out to begin with if he's going to be on his way out? Because it's kind of feeling like they're going to clean house.
Yeah, it's weird to buy a team and to keep everybody, right? Like it just goes against conventional wisdom. But to the point of kind of clearing things out just from a roster and cap point of view and acquiring draft picks, the more the Hornets do that, the more attractive the job becomes for a new GM and new coach, right? There's more flexibility. You can propose a new GM, or they want to promote somebody, whatever. Someone else taking the reins could look at the Hornets situation as a better job than if they didn't acquire these draft picks and didn't get off these salary cap numbers. So I think there's a bit of that in play as well.
Let's zoom out and look at the East and the West in terms of the standings, because my final question was going to be, who's your surprise team in the East and the West so far? I'm going to pull up the current rankings. I do a Eastern Conference Power Rankings article for All Hornets every Tuesday, I believe is when it comes out. I was looking at the West, and I was like, I'm really not paying attention, because there's teams in the West that are doing really, really well that I did not expect to see at the top of the standings there. But first in the East, who's your surprise team in the East right now? The Celtics are leading. The Bucks just fired their head coach and hired Doc Rivers at 31 and 13. So something was going on there. Joel Embiid just scored 70 this week. Give me your surprise team right now. I'm not going to show below the Hornets because it's Detroit and it's who is Detroit and is the Wizards and Pistons? Yeah, so I'm just gonna scroll up right there. So who's your surprise team right now?
So I just wanted to just mention briefly the Celtics, their home record. They finally lost at home. Being 20-1 at home is insane.
That's ridiculous. But
I want to give it to the Pacers because they I'm just jealous of Indiana, and like how they've addressed where they were, because they were where the Hornets were a couple years ago as a play-in fringe team, right? Mm-hmm. And they made a plan and they stuck with it, and now they traded for Siakam, and they're like, now they're going for it. They got this really sick guy in Haliburton, and they got Mathurin. Like, they got guys, yeah. Right? And it's a similar size market, and you look at them at where they are. Like, they finished as an 11 seed, I believe, last year. Now they're sitting out of the play-in entirely. Like, that's an admirable. And I'm very jealous, but I didn't expect them to be this good this soon. That's why I picked them.
That's a good one. Who were they playing last night? I saw come across. Was it the 76ers?
The Pacers, yeah, they beat the Sixers yesterday.
Yeah, because I saw that score flash across my phone last night, and I was just like, the Pacers are doing their thing. I went to go look them up. They're 25-20. They're 5-5 over the last 10. Like, they just beat the 76ers the other night. Yeah, me looking in the conference, I guess surprise team. I'm kind of surprised the Hawks are as low as they are. I kind of expected them to take that leap this year, and they just never have. And now I'm seeing Trae Young's name in trade talks, like to LA and other places. Like, if they trade Trae Young, they're literally blowing it up and redoing everything. But I guess that's the first one. And then I guess the Magic, because the Magic started out really hot at the beginning of the season, but they're really young, so we kind of knew they were going to kind of fall back to the pack. And now they kind of have. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games, and they're 23-21. They're in the 8th spot, so they're in the that play-in area or whatever. But and then of course the Heat just made the move for Terry Rozier. And you can never count out the Heat. Like, I feel like they're sitting at 7 right now, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter what they're, as long as they get in, then yeah, that's gonna be a situation. Problem. Yeah. So let's go over to the West real quick before I get you out of here. Sam Dracula stopping by to talk a little Hornets and NBA. Let's go over to the Western Conference real quick. Now this one kind of surprised me. Going in, I guess I knew in the back of my head, but I didn't really realize how good the top of the West is, and it's young. Like, the Timberwolves, the Thunder. Who's your surprise team in the West right now?
So it's two. It's OKC and the Clippers, right? So OKC is like, all right, this is them of years of acquiring draft picks. Like, this is the culmination of all that. So you got to wonder if they do something to fortify their team to really, like, lock in potentially the one seed,
yeah,
right? They're on that mix, and they have, in my opinion, the rookie of the year in Chet Holmgren. And then the Clippers, I did not.
We talked about the Clippers.
I hated everything they did this summer. And it's working, though. So you know what? My bad.
Yeah,
my bad. James Harden, Russell Westbrook, all them. Like, fair. Go for it, guys. It's working. Yeah.
I mean,
it's Kawhi and Paul. Like, it's working. It's
working. Like, Kawhi just signed an extension for three years or whatnot. Like,
got the wall coming next year. Like, they got it going over there.
I saw that. That wall thing looks crazy, and you could smoke at the top of it and all this other stuff. So it's like 50 rows straight up or something like that. Like, it looks nuts.
Armor's insane. I'm here for it.
I guess the fact that Zion's kind of been healthy for the majority of the season, the Pelicans are right there at 6, so that kind of checks out. The T-Wolves for me, I'm just like, okay, I know y'all traded for Rudy Gobert last year. We all kind of clown the deals. Like, well, what are y'all doing? That didn't make any sense, but it looks like it's working. 21-7 in conference play. They've won two straight, 7-3 of their last 10. Anthony Edwards has taken that step to superstar status, in my opinion. It feels like every night on SportsCenter, he's on there doing some kind of crazy dunk or just something nuts. And he just looks different. Like, you can see why he was picked over LaMelo, in that draft. But, It was Anthony Edwards, LaMelo, and who's the other guy?
James Wiseman.
Where's James Wiseman?
Detroit.
Oh, that's why we don't know where he is. Yeah. So that's what happened to the other guy. There was three of them in that draft, and I can't remember who the third guy was. And then my Lakers down at the 9th seed. I don't know what they can do. Seems like their roster is pretty much locked in, but the West is just jumbled with the teams that you thought were going to really be at the top are the older teams, the Lakers, the Mavericks, the Suns. The Suns are starting to make a move, though. They've won 7 straight. It's just littered with youth, and I didn't really think about it until I started really looking at it. But, yeah, between the T-Wolves, the Thunder, the Nuggets are relatively young, too. People forget the Nuggets are the defending champs and probably got one of the best players in the league in Jokic still, and nobody talks about them. And they're 31-15 and just chugging along.
Cause like that's a team that just kind of just punted on the regular season last year. Cause they knew, like, the Heat in a way where once we're in there, we're good. No one's beating us.
Can't beat us in a 7-game series. So it don't really matter.
Let's rest our guys. Let's get straight. And then we'll handle our business in the playoffs.
We'll go in 50-32 or whatever. And then we'll just be good to go as the 5 seed and just run through everybody. I think LeBron used to be that way too, but now it's like, you really can't be. And shout out to LeBron before we get out of here. Special situation being voted as a starter for the 20th year to the All-Star game, I think is unprecedented. I don't think anyone's ever done that before. Not Kareem, not Kobe, not Tim Duncan, or whoever. So shout out to LeBron for hitting that feat. Follow Sam on Twitter @SamDracula. All kinds of Hornets content coming out from the All Hornets camp. at @all_Hornets. Go follow us there for weekly podcasts, articles, game recaps, updates, reviews, injury report, everything you need for the Hornets. You can catch it right there with us over there. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Of course, anytime.
Coming up, David Glenn's in the Sports Buffet. We got a whole lot to talk about in terms of he's going to finish off our NFL playoff picks for the conference championship round. Jalen Gilkey went 3-1 last week. BDOT went undefeated the week before. We'll see if DG can hold that up. Plus, a look around the ACC Big Four this weekend. You're watching Franchise Players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com.
In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Shout out to Sam Dracula and Ricky Raines for stopping by today and their respective stuff, All Hornets SI for Sam and the Cat Crate blog and the Kitty Lit podcast for Ricky. Definitely go follow them and their excellent work each week. Joining me in his bi-weekly spot, it is David Glenn from the North Carolina Sports Network. You can follow DG on Twitter at David Glenn Show. What's going on, DG?
I'm doing great, Des. Good to be with you as always.
With loaded sports weekend, a lot I want to touch on real quick with the small amount of time that I have you here. And I will just jump into it. The biggest news in the state of North Carolina this week are the hires of Dan Morgan and Dave Canales to the Carolina Panthers. Let's start off with Dan Morgan. Real quick, your thoughts on that, because you've been covering Dan since he was a player with the Carolina Panthers. Good move by the Panthers to elevate Dan instead of bringing somebody in from outside the building.
We'll see is the honest answer. What we know is Dan Morgan's an easy guy to like, an easy guy to respect, a straight shooter, good with people, knows the game of football, great player himself, of course, when he was healthy. What I don't know if we can know yet is what'll happen when he disagrees with David Tepper. You know, that there has been the accusation that the only people that David Tepper keeps around are those who are closer to the yes man end of the spectrum, and that some of those who disagree more aggressively are no longer there. I mean, where does Dan fit on that spectrum? I don't know the answer to that. And from this side of the curtain, I'm not sure it's possible for us to know the answer to that. But is he capable? Yes. Is he knowledgeable? Yes. Does he have the respect of his peers and the players there? I think yes. So I'm not against it, but it's hard to be super confident without knowing what's going on behind the curtain.
So if you're Dave Canales, the former offensive coordinator for Tampa Bay, he's got a working relationship with Dan Morgan. They worked together for 7 years in Seattle. You're now the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. I assume you're going to be lockstep with Dan Morgan in terms of decision-making and everything else. You're day one. Let's say you're Dave Canales, and it's day one, and you're sitting in Charlotte in the Panthers headquarters, and you've got a roster in front of you, and you're just reading through it. When you go see Dan down the hall, what are you going to say? What's the first thing you would do roster-wise, like as you look at the Carolina Panthers roster going forward? Like, what's the number one thing they need to tackle first?
Number one, I think they need to make decisions about the offensive line. Is Ike Ekwonu truly a left tackle, or are you going to move him inside? That's a big personnel decision. How about better targets for Bryce Young? That's a big personnel decision, whether you draft a wide receiver with your first pick or whether you go the free agency route, and what's realistic there. So obviously filling out your staff is hugely important as well. But those are some of the first things that come to mind in those conversations. And I have to think, Des, real quick, that David Tepper must have put a lot of weight on Dan Morgan's opinion of Dave Canales, because we all – you'd have to be crazy not to respect the way Canales helped Geno Smith resurrect his career in Seattle. That deserves a ton of respect.
Yeah.
And the work he did with Baker Mayfield at Tampa this year, period, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are primary reasons that he got the job, and understandably so, given the importance of Bryce Young and his future to the future of the Carolina Panthers. The great unknown from the outside is, you know, Dave Canales has never been asked to lead an NFL locker room. Dave Canales had never been an NFL coordinator prior to last season. He had been a quarterback's coach and a wide receiver coach. Heck, 14 years ago, he was like an assistant strength coach at the college level. I mean, there's a risk to asking somebody to be a leader of grown men at the professional level who has never done that before. So Dan Morgan must have said incredibly positive things about Canales' leadership ability, because even if you're a quarterback whisperer, which we know the Panthers needed, you better be a leader of men and a leader of professional locker rooms, or your quarterback guru skills are not going to save you.
It does seem like, and every place he's gone and then left, because Geno kind of fell back to earth after he left Seattle. And then I'm curious what's going to happen with Baker, because he's got Baker in a position where he can now go secure a bag from Tampa Bay now, same situation, but now Canales is gone. So it's like, will Baker be the same quarterback as he was with them there? I do like what I've heard from Canales in terms of players love him, apparently. He seems like he's a guy that commands a lot of respect when he's in the room. Very energetic, kind of got that Pete Carroll thing going on, which makes sense because he came into the league with Pete Carroll. He's only 42, which matches up with what David Tepper said he wanted in that weird press conference, that he wanted somebody that could give his eulogy. So he's young enough to be there here. If he was here for 20 plus years, that would be delightful. We've never had a coach here that long. And he becomes the second Hispanic American head coach in Panthers history behind Ron Rivera. And I think he's the only one in the NFL currently right now. So I've grown on it. I kind of got tipped off from Jonathan Stewart like a day prior that it was going to be Canales. I don't know how he knew, but I was like, okay. And then it went down like that morning. I'm like, oh, so Dave Canales, good luck, sir. You've got a lot of work to do. The Panther fans, if you start winning, the Panther fans will treat you like a king. If not, they will turn on you so quickly. This fan base is so emotionally charged right now in terms of everything they've had to go through. Another situation I wanted to talk about, too, in the sports buffet is Bill Belichick. Will Bill Belichick be employed next year? Because it's starting to look like the only two spots open are Seattle and Washington, and it looks like Ben Johnson's going to be the guy for the Commanders. I don't know what Seattle's doing, so he only interviewed with Atlanta. He's considered the greatest coach of all time, right? But it looks like he might not, his services may no longer be required. Thoughts on Bill Belichick and what he might be doing in 2024?
Well, he's running out of opportunities at the head coaching pro level, right? Because of the outline that you just gave there. Of course, it'll be up to Bill Belichick if he would consider working for a head coach. Anybody would want that guy as a defensive coordinator or some kind of a, you know, an advisor or whatever. But I do think the bottom line is the guy will be 72 years old by the next NFL regular season. And there has never been a full-time head coach in NFL history who coached past his 73rd birthday. So if you're going to be 72 before next season starts, I don't think people are hesitant about Bill Belichick as a head coaching candidate because, you know, things went poorly for the Patriots at the end. I think he has the universal respect of the league. But if you'll be 72 later this year and no head coach has ever, no full-time head coach, I think there was an interim who was 73 or so. But, I mean, that says people are afraid. They don't want to hire his successor 2 years down the road.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
You can call it ageism or whatever else. But if there's never been a full-time coach past 73 and you're almost 72, people are going to look at you that way. And that's the starting point for the entire analysis about Bill Belichick, although I know others are trying to turn it into something different than that.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because look at what David Tepper said about the coach he wanted to hire. He wanted somebody young. So that Belichick never entered the chat room when it came to being considered. And I can see that logic across the league where, plus two, the media has a different relationship with Bill Belichick than the teams in the league do. Like, the teams in the league may view Bill Belichick a little bit differently than the way the media views him up here on a pedestal. Some of those teams might not like him. Some of those teams, he's been the bane of their existence for 20 years. So, like, maybe they don't want him in the building. So it's one of those situations where we've seen a lot of legendary coaches kind of, if not retire, just kind of get moved out in the past 3-4 years in multiple different sports. But we hit hard college basketball, especially in the ACC, with Roy Williams and Coach K and Jim Boeheim, and just drain of like coaches like leaving the building. And now you're starting to see it in the NFL with Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, you know, these guys that have been around forever. Pete Carroll's older than Bill Belichick, and now he's not working right now. So it's, I don't know. It's different. It's like turning the page in sports a little bit. ACC roundup while we're in the sports buffet. This week, three of the ACC Big Four in action. Third ranked UNC at FSU. It's a 2 o'clock tip off. Clemson at 12th ranked Duke is a 4 o'clock tip off. Both of those are on ESPN, and NC State at Syracuse, which is a little bit later on in the evening. Which team out of the ACC Big Four is most likely to lose on Saturday? Carolina, Duke, or NC State?
I'll take NC State. It's just hard to win on the road in the ACC. And that's bad for the Wolfpack because what they need is quad one wins. And the only way you're getting quad one wins in this league right now is to beat either Duke or Carolina anywhere, home or away, or to beat another kind of middle of the road ACC team at their place. You're not getting the same punch about beating them at out of beating them at PNC Arena. That's just the way the quad stuff works. So the Wolfpack's a nice, solid ACC team, but, man, they struggle to score sometimes. The games that I have attended, including Carolina's win in Raleigh over the Wolfpack, they just really struggle to score the ball. And if DJ Horn, their transfer point guard, is off, then they really struggle to score the ball. So I don't think the Wolfpack is an NCAA tournament team this year. Obviously, Duke and Carolina are setting the bar for this league, as they so often do. But either the Devils or the Heels could lose. I mean, I know that the Heels haven't lost in conference play yet. Anybody who thinks they're going to be the first to go 20-0 in ACC play.
I'm not there yet.
They're dreaming. I'm pretty sure nobody's been, since it expanded to a 20-game conference schedule, I don't think anybody's been better than 16-4 in that relatively short number of years. Now, the Heels are in the driver's position for their first place finish in quite a while. And maybe they'll be the favorite at the ACC tournament in D.C. this year. We'll see. Long way to go. But, yeah, Florida State causes the Heels trouble with how the Heels like to run their offense because of the Seminoles' athleticism and their length and the way they play defense under Leonard Hamilton. And, frankly, Clemson visiting Duke, the Tigers, if Carolina is 1A and Duke is 1B, Clemson's probably the third best team in this league right now. I know they've lost a few lately, but – there are only three coaches that would be 100% sure they're in the NCAA tournament if that selection committee met right now. And their names are Hubert Davis, John Shire, and Brad Brownell. There's a couple of others on the bubble, but the Tigers have a couple of non-conference victories that are propping up their resume. TCU, Alabama, I think. So a lot of these other schools in the ACC have better conference records, but they don't have any non-conference signature victories.
Like a Florida State.
Or that matters a ton on Selection Sunday. And that's why those Tigers, I think, are dangerous as they head to Duke, although the Devils tend to play a lot better at home than they've played on the road.
Follow him on Twitter at David Glenn Show. David Glenn joining us here from the North Carolina Sports Network and the Sports Buffet. You are our guest picker for this week. BDOT started us off with the wild card round, went undefeated, even picked his Cowboys to lose in spectacular fashion. He was actually the first one that I heard where he was actually hoping for it to happen because he wanted Mike McCarthy to be fired and then bring in Bill Belichick. And I was just like, what? Like when he said it. And then like literally all this stuff started happening after the Cowboys lost. In spectacular fashion to the Green Bay Packers. Jalen Gilkey from WFMY News 2 Sports here in Greensboro was our guest picker last week. He went 3-1 in the divisional round, and DG is going to be our picker for conference championship weekend. One of the best Sundays in sports. AFC championship is going to start it off. Ravens hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. Who do you got in this one? It's in Baltimore. They're the one seed. They've been pretty much the best team all year. But Kansas City has Pat Mahomes, so it's like, like who are you going to go here with?
It is hard to bet against Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. There's no doubt about it. I saw Andy work his magic in Philly as a lifelong Eagles fan. But I will take the home team. I think the Ravens, with Lamar Jackson as that MVP candidate, but also John Harbaugh, to me, is an elite NFL coach, just like his brother Jim has been an elite college football coach. And the fact that the game is in Baltimore, I think matters. You know, both of these teams that are at home this weekend worked their tails off for 17 weeks or 18 weeks to get that home field advantage. And I really think it matters in this current format where they got the bye week to get a little healthier. And then you get, obviously, the fans on your side. We'll see what the weather is in these two games, but I will take the Ravens to beat the Chiefs and send Andy and Pat Mahomes home a little earlier than they're used to.
Sixth conference championship appearance in a row for the Kansas City Chiefs. First time they're on the road for one. They've all of them been Arrowhead. Right. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff on CBS. NFC championship, San Francisco 49ers taking on the Detroit Lions, led by head coach Dan Campbell and quarterback Jared Goff. That is a 6:30 kickoff on Fox. And that is in San Francisco. Give me your pick on that one, DG.
I will take the chalk here as well. And credit to those guys who preceded me for getting your show to this lofty point in terms of your postseason winning percentage. I hope not to be the bad luck charm here.
I think you got some good picks here. Yeah.
I admire the Detroit Lions story. Obviously, that fan base had been starved more than any other, really, dating back to the early 1990s.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of happy. I don't have any allegiance to the Lions. I just know they have a large, passionate fan base that has not been able to smile very often for 30 years almost. So I think the better team is San Francisco. They're great on defense. They have Christian McCaffrey. Brock Purdy has exceeded anybody's possible expectations as a quarterback. And again, the Niners are at home. So I thought going into the playoffs, it would be a Ravens 49ers Super Bowl. Hmm. And I hope I'm right for your purposes today.
Well, according to the folks that follow conspiracy theories, you're going to be absolutely right, because the Super Bowl logo are the colors of the Ravens and the 49ers. Right. And it's been that way for 3 years now. Apparently the colors have matched the teams that have gotten in it, and the logo's been out for like months. So it's got purple and that red color in there. So Ravens 49ers Super Bowl, Lamar Jackson taking on Taylor Swift. Well, no. She'd be with the Chiefs, so she wouldn't even be there. So I think what's going to happen, Chiefs are going to figure out a way to be there, because the NFL wants Taylor Swift at a Super Bowl booth. Because that's just, instead of 100 million people watching, it's 200 million people watching.
To me, the funniest part of the whole Taylor Swift conversation is that NFL ratings have actually gone up.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tony Dungy and others speculating nonsensically about how fans are disenchanted with off the field stuff. Of course, some fans don't like it. We all know that. But they more fans do like it.
They show her like four times a game whenever Kelsey makes a catch or something spectacular. They'll show her in the booth. But they do that with other people too. It's just Taylor Swift. And it doesn't even bother me anymore. I'm just
people
like.
People just like to complain. The bottom line like is the NFL is the most lucrative, wealthy sport in the history of the world. Not an exaggeration. And their TV deals, worth more than $10 billion a year, are signed all the way through 2033. I mean, it's the best economic foundation literally in the history of sports. And you got people, you got clowns talking about the demise of the NFL. They've been talking about that for 10 years. They must not do their homework.
David Tepper bought the Carolina Panthers for $2 billion in 2018. It is 2024. They have yet to have a winning season, and that franchise is worth $6 billion as we sit here today. So I think they're doing really good. Yeah. Follow DG on Twitter at David Glenn Show. Go subscribe to the North Carolina Sports Network on YouTube, where you can catch the David Glenn Show. It's back. You can catch that there. New episodes dropping pretty frequently, so definitely go check that out. DG, we'll see you in 2 weeks, buddy.
Thanks, Dez. Always good to be with you.
And that's it for Franchise Players for Friday, January 26, 2024. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Peace. We'll see you next week.